Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Education Conference Committee to order. The first order of business we're going to do is we're just going to very briefly go around the table and allow individuals who are sitting at the table to introduce themselves so that those of us who don't know who our good friends in the Senate are can get a chance to know them through this this process. So if we just want to, we'll go ahead and begin with our friends in the Senate. And Senator Olson, would you like to begin?
Thank you very much. Jen Olson, State Senate, Chair of Education Committee from Senate District 33, and our trusty fiscal analyst here.
Eric Naumann, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Shelby McQuay, Research Analyst.
Anne Marie Younger, Senate Counsel.
Benjamin Cruz, Minnesota Senate, Senate District 47.
Pam Wolf, Senate District 51.
Senator Thompson, I don't believe is going to be here, so he is the missing link here.
Right, and we'll have Senator Nelson back in just a moment. She had to step out for a phone call.
Okay.
My name is Greg Marcus. I'm the committee administrator in the Education Committee in the Senate.
Ed Cook, Senate Republican Caucus Research.
Senator Terry Bonoff, not on the conference committee, but will attend. Thanks.
And Casey.
Casey Peterson, Senator Olson's LA.
Super.
If we want to begin over here in the House.
Aaron Solem, Committee Administrator.
Carmen Carter, Policy Committee Administrator.
Shannon Patrick, DFL Caucus Research.
Abigail Johnson, GOP Research.
Rebecca Peichel, Committee LA.
Representative Dan Fabian, District 1A.
Representative Connie Depke, the southern half of Senator Olson's Senate District and Vice Chair of the Education Reform Committee.
Sandra Erickson, Chair of Education Reform.
Lisa Larson, House Research.
Tim Strong from House Research.
I'm Greg Crow from the House Fiscal Analysis Department.
And I'm Pat.
Dana from DFL Research, why don't you come on up as well?
I didn't have a name, please.
Oh. Here, I got some post-it notes. We can make one for you.
Come on up and introduce yourself and join the fun.
I had a nameplate when I worked in the House that I lost.
We can just like put a note over Senator Thompson's name.
That might not go over well.
We'll call you the sixth conferee.
And we have Jean over here is our page for committee page in the Senate. I don't know if you have some of those folks looking after you here too.
Well, they constantly look after me, but I don't know if they're here right now.
Okay.
So
they're
not. Okay. So, and I'm Pat Grofflow. I'm the chair of the Education Finance Committee, and welcome to all the conferees, and congratulations on your appointment to this committee. The first item on the agenda, what we'll do is we have in your books you'll have the Education Finance Committee tracking sheets that are in the towards the back of the book that we're going to have Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, and Senate staff really kind of go through and cover these items. So, let's wait until everybody has those up. Those will be towards the very back of your book.
Mr. Chair and members, just for ease of walking through spreadsheets, we're going to just go through the appropriations tracking sheet that is created by the House. Mr. Naumann has checked off on this, and he and I have walked through the Senate spreadsheet, and we've made sure all the numbers are the same and the bottom line is the same, and we're in agreement in totals. So just for ease of walking through, we'll walk through the House sheet. It says Greg Crow, House Fiscal Staff, in the upper right-hand corner. It looks like this on landscape. I noticed that there were copies on the table for the Senate. And as Mr. Chair noted, the House members have this in their binders.
Just for members, if you have any questions about the spreadsheet, I know there's probably some new items for both members of the House and the Senate. Just wave me down, and we'll stop. Let Mr. Crow finishes. Let one of the three researchers finish their thought, and then we'll go to the member questions. But at any time, just flag me down for a question. So thank you, Mr. Crow.
So, Mr. Chair, just to orient you to the spreadsheet, the first set of columns, there's the description in the first column of the program, a line number, and then a description. And if the program is italicized, that means there's some sort of program change being described on that line. The first eight columns are the House recommended amount for the first and second biennium, the 12-13 fiscal year and the 14-15 fiscal year, and then a calculation of that recommendation compared to base for House File 934. Then the second group of columns, there's 10 columns detailing the appropriations costs of Senate File 1030, a comparison to base for the Senate bill, and then a comparison to the House bill, and then the same for fiscal 14 and 15. So probably the useful columns, if you want to see where there are change items, are to look at the change versus base and different Senate minus House amounts. And so we'll kind of highlight those as we walk through the spreadsheet line by line. The first thing we'll note is on lines 5 and 6, there's just a description at the beginning of what happens to the basic formula amount in each bill. In House File 934, the formula allowance is increased from $51.24 in fiscal year 2012, which is an increase of $50 or 1%, and then increased again by $36 in fiscal 13 to $5,210, an additional 0.7%. And then for fiscal 14 is increased again by $45 to $5,255, an additional 0.9% increase.
And Mr. Chair and members, in the Senate bill, the increase is similar to the House in the first year. It's identical. It's an additional $50, 1%. And the Senate does an additional 1% in the second year, taking the total formula allowance to $52.24. But unlike the House, there is no increase in fiscal 14.
Mr. Chair and members, the first change item is on line 11, where both the House and the Senate bill institute a 70-30 aid payment percentage shift, which saves a little over $1 billion in both bills. In the House, you'll see a difference in fiscal 14 and 15, and this will show everywhere there's a shifted program. The House File 934 moves the payment percentage back to 90% for fiscal 14, and the Senate bill leaves it at 90-10. So as you can see, the House line 11 has a significant cost of a little over $1 billion. That's the same as the savings in the 12-13 biennium, as opposed to the Senate, which continues the ongoing savings amount from instituting that shift.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Fabian?
Just curious to know, on line 11, the shift payback is so different between the House and the Senate. I'm curious to know what the Senate's philosophy is on that. If
you want me to answer that? Or
no. Senator Olson?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chair, the Senate put the shift in place to be paid back as it is in statute.
Representative Fabian?
Which is when, as money comes into the Treasury, there's an order by which it is added first to the cash flow and to the reserve, and then it pays back the shift. We did not take an overt stance on starting to pay it back.
Representative Fabian? Mr. Crowell? Or is it Mr. Nunn? Mr. Crowell? No, go ahead. Are you still up? Yep, go ahead. Mr. Crowell?
We're on line 12, which is the property tax shift, and these are similar. The Senate has a little bit less shift savings because we'll get to the levy tracking sheet, and there is, well, I'll let Mr. Nauman speak to what happens on the levy side in the Senate.
In the Senate package, there's a strong interaction between the levies and the aides on this particular line item. So when levies are reduced in the Senate bill, the Senate needs to reduce the amount of property tax shift because there's less levy, so there's less savings. So the Senate spends $8.9 million on this line to account for the fact that its levies are reduced by roughly $17 million. And then, Mr. Chairman, members, I'll move down to line 13. Both the House and the Senate accepted the governor's recommendation to change the property tax shift methodology. The department argued that there is a sizable delay associated with accommodating the credits, and that this is a cleanup mechanism, and it also saves about $13.6 million associated with accepting that position.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 14, there's a an accounting for an aid cost relative to the property tax shift in House File 934. What happens is that the levies, as you'll see when we get to that sheet for the House for House File 934, are kept at zero due to a zero levy target, and so. There are some individual programs where levies go up and down, and one of these is in the Alternative Facilities Program, where you'll see later on this sheet the House eliminates Alternative Facilities Aid, which in turn increases the Alternative Facilities Levy. And to offset that increase, the Operating Capital Levy is reduced and nets that change to zero on the levy side. On the aid side, what it does is because the levy that's reduced, the operating capital levy, is shiftable levy, and some of the new levy in the alternative facilities program is debt levy, which is not shiftable, you actually lose shift savings in the amount of just over $8 million when that transfer and that offset is made, and that's what's reflected on line 14. And actually, if you look down to line 32, that's the offset of additional aid needed to offset the levy increases in the other parts of the House bill. And then line 17 is the next change line. This is the appropriation cost of the basic formula increase, and you can see that they're pretty similar amounts because both the House and Senate formula amounts are fairly similar.
And so, Mr. Chair and members, on line 18, the Senate accepted a governor's recommendation to include some additional students in the LEP program, and it carried an $85,000 impact.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 19, the House bill eliminates training and experience aid. This completes an action that was begun with the 1997 legislature, which eliminated T&E aid on a going forward as faculties in school districts turned over. They would no longer qualify to generate T&E aid. There's just a small amount that continues and gets down to about $100,000 by fiscal 15 that is eliminated in the House bill. On line 20, House File 934 increases the extended time formula to $5,124 per pupil. Under current law, the formula amount is $4,601, which was the basic formula amount when the extended time formula was created. This is effective for fiscal 2013 and later at an appropriation cost of about $6 million in this biennium and about $10 million per year on an ongoing basis. Then lines 21 through 23 basically are the same provision. Both the House and Senate have provisions to allow the Lancaster and Northland school districts to continue to receive sparsity revenue. There's general language in both bills, and then specific references to those districts. And they end up being the same dollar amount if you total the three lines with one exception, and that's related to the Northland school.
And the issue there is that in the Northland School District, in the Senate provision, we provided the fiscal 11 revenue to the school district in fiscal 12 so that we didn't have to carry accounting for fiscal 11. But that carries a slightly higher cost on the Senate package.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 24, starting in fiscal 2013 and later, the House bill includes a provision that gives school districts with under 1,000 pupils additional revenue. Basically, there's a sliding scale for enrollment between 0 and 1,000, calculated on 8% of the basic formula allowance. And the basic formula allowance is, for this purpose, if you think of it as about $5,000, 8% of that is about $400. So a district with 0 or 1 pupil would get $400 per student. A district with 999 would get 999 one-thousandths of $400 per pupil, so basically a buck or two. So that's how the scale works. So as the schools get larger, they get less revenue under this provision. The appropriation cost starting in fiscal 13 is about $15 million with an ongoing obligation of just over $20 million per year.
Mr. Chair, I'll give Mr. Crow a slight spell here. This one is in both bills. Both bills repeal the January 15th deadline. Under current law, school districts are required to settle their contracts by January 15th of each contract year, and if they don't, there is a $25 per pupil penalty. And as a result of that assumed penalty, the department books into the forecast for each biennium a $700,000 effect, which is split over 2 years based on the payment schedule. So both the House and Senate bill carry that cost, and it's a $700,000 cost over the in each biennium.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 26, there's a provision in the House bill that removes an exception for the graduation, the math graduation test. What this is assumed to do is result in more students or fewer students graduating, so more students would be in school districts for purposes of calculating all revenues that are calculated on a per pupil basis. This provision is effective for fiscal year 2015. You see the appropriation cost of those students at about $13 million out in fiscal 2015, out in the sixth column of numbers. And then on line 27, the House bill has a provision that requires the Purpich Center for Arts Education to convert to a charter school, and that we'll see a few different lines that relate to that. On the aid side, the fact that these students are charter school students will add students into the aid formulas, because right now the Purpich Center is funded with a direct appropriation, and any students at the Purpich Center are not counted as pupils for the purposes of our funding formulas. So these additional students in the system generate additional general education aid in the dollar amounts, just in the $2 million roughly range per year that you see on line 27.
And Mr. Chair and members, both bills essentially carry the same provision on the early graduation achievement program. So under the provisions of the bill, a student that graduates from high school early is allowed to essentially take a credit or a dollar figure and use that dollar figure into a higher education institution. The amount of that figure is higher depending on how early a student graduates. So a student that graduates one semester early will receive one amount of revenue, and then two semesters early would generate a slightly higher amount. And both bills have that, although the Senate bill does not go quite as far as the House bill. There's an additional permutation to that.
Mr. Crow, did you want to cover that difference between the House and the Senate?
Mr. Chair, I think it's just a technical difference.
Oh.
No, it's the military.
Right. Mr. Chair, I apologize there. The House bill has a provision that students in the military can graduate early that's different than the Senate position that do early enlistment in the military. And Mr. Chair, line 29 is a House-only provision. What this is an enrollment option for students in low-performing schools in cities of the first class. Students in those schools are allowed to enroll in a non-public school, and a scholarship check is issued for tuition at that non-public school. The assumption is that there will be a growing number of those students over time as the program is in place, and so you see the increased cost over time, about $16 million in this biennium and about $55 million in the next biennium. And then on line 30, the House bill has a provision that reverses a change that was made to how taconite production taxes are collected and whether they offset general education aid or whether they are allowed to reduce other property taxes in the taconite districts. There's a timing issue related to this, and there's also currently there isn't a lot of taconite production tax being generated, so there's a small savings in fiscal 13, and then it grows to a couple million dollars by fiscal 15 and on an ongoing basis.
And so, Mr. Chair and members, I'll do line 31. It appears in both bills. This accepts the governor's recommendation that students that are interested in a trial placement in the Minnesota State Academies be given that opportunity, and there's some slight, we're carrying on this line item some slight reductions associated with general education costs for an assumed increased participation at the Minnesota State Academies.
And Mr. Chair, line 32, the operating capital equalizing factor increases. What I mentioned is that the lever that's used on the aid side to reduce levies to keep the house at zero on the levy side.
And Mr. Chair and members, on line 33 is a Senate-only provision. What the Senate did in compensatory revenue was to freeze the total revenue on an entitlement basis for fiscal year 12 and 13 and on beyond that at fiscal year 11 levels. Excuse me. There's a calculation that we'll get into when we talk about when we go through the language, but essentially it is the revenue in compensatory is frozen at those fiscal year 11 levels and then prorated up or down to ensure that the entitlement stays at the fiscal 11 levels. Line 34 is a Senate-only provision. This was a line that we added coming out of the Finance Committee, and I'll confess that we're still in conversation with the Department of Finance to determine whether we actually need to carry this cost. Members are probably of the House are probably familiar with the cash flow borrowing provisions that the school districts experience when the Department of to avoid cash flow borrowing on the part of the state. The school districts often have their or in the last 2 years have had revenue withheld from them or state aid withheld from them. And the Senate provision was to allow that withholding to still occur, but on those occasions when it did occur, we would provide we would allow interest payments to be paid to school districts. And the difference with the House provision is that I believe it's repealed in the House bill. And so Mr. Chair and members, the line 35 concludes the general education program. The last line there, where there's a House and Senate difference, the House accepted the advanced final payment calculation the Senate bill accepted the governor's recommendation of a $4 million hold harmless for school districts that are in SOD, and the House did 4.6.
Any questions from members of the committee regarding the general education portion of the spreadsheet? Continue. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I believe the next change item is on line 44. It's a Senate.
Yeah.
Provision.
We have both bills make it. I mean, there's members will advise that in many cases we're going to see negative numbers that we're going to skip right past, and that's because they're shifted programs. So, abatement aid is a good example, consolidation, transition. We get down to non-public pupil revenue, and there's a collection of items going on in there in the Senate bill. First, the Senate bill makes some changes to the homeschool program where non-public schools that are greater than 10 pupils still continue to have the program as unchanged. But the Senate captured some savings associated with the homeschool The textbook aid and the services aid, this was Senator Olson's provision, so she can speak of it in great detail. We also had, there is some savings in non-public pupil revenue associated with the salary freeze that's included in the Senate bill. And then there's some slight cost associated with the formula allowance increase, because we adjust non-public pupil aid, non-public pupil transportation when the formula is increased. And that would account for line 45. And then,
Mr. Chair, members, the next change is on line 49, which is a House-only change, and that is a new compensatory pilot program for fiscal 2012 only. You see the appropriation in 12 and 13, but that's because it's a shifted appropriation. So for fiscal 2012, the district will be entitled to $17 million of aid. And what this does is it provides additional compensatory revenue for the districts in the top 20 in terms of total enrollment. The top 10 districts get a slightly higher amount than the 11th through 20th districts, and the districts that qualify for more than the amount specified in the new law get the greater of what they're getting now or this additional pilot formula aid. So around half of the districts actually end up generating revenue under this provision, because some of them already have compensatory revenue per pupil greater than what would be generated by this provision.
And so, Mr. Chair and members, line 82 and line 83, I believe, are the next changes, where the Senate, it's kind of hidden underneath the shift calculations, but the Senate bill accepted the governor's recommendation to eliminate the grandfather part of this charter school building lease aid formula. And the Senate bill also accepted the governor's recommendation to begin a phase out of the charter school startup aid.
Mr. Chair and members, on the House side, the charter school lease aid includes the shift savings, but there's also some cost built in there with the assumption that the Perfect Center for Arts Education would become a charter school and qualify for lease aid, and in the same way would qualify for startup aid on line 83. And Mr. Chair and members, on line 84, the House bill eliminates integration aid for districts in the cities of the first class and for all districts that qualify for the new, and then renames integration aid to innovation aid in the same and qualifies districts in the same amount of revenue that they had qualified for under integration aid, excepting the districts in the cities of the first class. On the levy side, you'll see the levy is retained for districts that are currently levying and are part of the integration aid program to levy for innovation aid. And then the House File 934 sets a requirement that the money be spent on research-based methods for reducing the achievement gap.
And Mr. Chair and members, on line 84, this is a House spreadsheet, so it didn't pick up the titling on the Senate side of the bill, but we'll get into that when we look through some of the language. The Senate locks in the integration aid at fiscal year 11 levels for fiscal year 12. Then in fiscal year 13, the Senate eliminates both the levy and the aid. That $19 million that you see under fiscal 13 is the lagging payment associated with the shift. And then in fiscal 14 and 15, integration revenue is repealed. It's actually repealed in 13, but you see a little bit of payment left over. Then much of those dollars have been repurposed into the Senate's literacy transition aid. This is a program that I know will. Thank you. You see what happened. Our literacy transition aid is actually line 84 in the Senate bill. That's what's happening in the first year. In the second year, the literacy incentive aid is the correct titling. And what happens there is that the Senate has two parts of a formula that rewards school districts based on their performance on a third grade literacy test. So school districts that half the formula is geared towards growth. So the formula is discounted and applied against the enrollment of each site based on the percent performance growth between third and fourth grade. And then there's another half of the formula that is calculated based on a proficiency. And sites will get more money based on the percentage of students that are achieving at proficiency levels. So I'm sure we'll talk about that in greater detail. Then line 686, I believe, I'm looking at the title here, I think that one is the teacher stipend aid. That's $4.45 million each year beginning in fiscal 13, and that's basically a stipend to encourage school teachers to take some testing requirements. Mr. Chair and members, line 87, both bills repeal the governor's recommended position of the magnet school and program grants. That was $750,000 a year, and both bills repeal that. Line 89 is the next Senate position, which beginning in fiscal year 13 repeals the inter-district DSEG transportation revenue and takes it out in 13 as well as into the tails. Mr. Chair and members, line 92 would have the next policy change. The tribal contract schools are increased when the formula allowance is increased as well. So there's a slight increase there. It's buried underneath the shift, but that's what's happening. Mr. Chair and members, on line 101, the Senate increased the reading core and the early literacy line item, essentially increasing it from $1.375 million per year to $4.125 with a tail. Mr. Chair and members, on line 103, the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organization is increased from $725,000 to $800,000, and when we get to the appropriation, we'll talk a little bit about the rider, which is changed in the Senate bill.
Mr. Chair and members, line 105 is a House-only provision that grades schools on their performance and then provides funding or additional aid of $100 per pupil to the highest performing schools. And then line 106, if you remember, we talked on the first page about the low performing schools enrollment options. The first page was the savings that's generated because pupils enrolling in non-public schools won't generate per pupil aid, and so they will be out of the funding formula. So there's some savings generated. And then line 106 is the scholarship check that gets written to cover the tuition payments that are made under this program for students attending non-public schools. And then line 107 is $150,000 per year appropriation for the Principals Leadership Institute. Lines 112 and 13, the House and the Senate treat the same for special education. The growth factors for the regular aid and the excess cost aid are eliminated, which generates savings in both bills in 12 and 13. And then the difference in the tails, again, is the different treatment of the shift. And Mr. Chair, the next difference is on line 124. The House has a provision that allows, House File 934 has a provision that allows school districts with maximum effort capital loans to repay their obligation, the principal obligation of those loans to the state, and have the interest on those loans forgiven. and which will allow them to refinance those loans at a better rate through a local bond issue rather than through the state maximum effort school loan program. You'll see a significant savings down at the bottom of the spreadsheet. This line here actually is a cost line because there's some debt service equalization aid that's assumed to get paid once those districts start levying for the new bonds that they use to refinance their maximum effort capital loan. There's almost $30 million of savings built into fiscal 2013 that we'll point out at the bottom that assumes that three school districts write checks to the state totaling about $30 million to pay off the principal balance of their loans.
And Mr. Chair and members, on line 125 is the aid cost associated with an Elk River fund transfer. The Senate bill has a collection of fund transfers from debt accounts to operating capital, this is the one that carries an aid impact. We'll talk about the others when we get to the levy side.
Mr. Chair and members, that's it for changes on that page.
Alternative facilities?
Oh, right. Mr. Chair, line 127. The House bill eliminates, starting in fiscal 13, alternative facilities aid, which saves about $20 million a year on an entitlement basis, and you'll see a corresponding levy increase on the levy tracking sheet of the same amount.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe staff could explain that change on the House side.
Mr. Crow or Mr. Straub?
Explain
the change in all facilities.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, under current law, there are seven school districts that get aid paid to them to reduce their alternative facilities levy. It's not an equalized levy. It's a targeted payment that started with the tax committee looking for a levy to reduce levies in certain cities when they were attempting to offset some of the changes that they were making in the tax bill, and so kind of outside of the education realm, they just independently went in and reduced these levies. Then the next year, some of the other districts that didn't qualify for that aid asked for it and were given that aid, which amounts basically to property tax relief. And so those seven districts on an ongoing basis have received payments of almost $20 million. And so the House bill eliminates those. It doesn't have any effect on the revenue those districts get because they can levy back what they lose in aid. And the seven districts are Minneapolis, Anoka, Hennepin, Bloomington, Robbinsdale, Rochester, St. Paul, and Duluth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And does that complete that page?
Mr. Chair, it does. And the next changes are in the middle of page 3 on line 168, or line 169 is the first change. The House bill includes $5 million per year for early childhood scholarships.
And Mr. Chair and members, I think the next change is on line 181. The Senate accepted the governor's recommendation to reduce the adult basic education aid calculation from a 3% program growth factor to 2%.
And Mr. Chair and members, the House bill, House File 934, eliminates the growth factor for ABE, so achieves some additional savings beyond what the governor's proposal and the Senate bill do. And then, Mr. Chair, there's a calculation on line 246 that takes into account all of the appropriations that are traditional education appropriations for education programs, and you can see that both bills are at about $14 billion, $14.2 billion in spending. There are some changes that happen outside of what we would call education expenditures that do affect your bottom line, the bottom lines in both bills, and the method of achieving the targets that both that were set in both the House and the Senate for these bills. On the House side, on line 252, the House bill counts about $15 million of savings from going to from 90-10 on the aid payment schedule to 70-30 that occur in appropriations outside of education in the tax aids and credits budget. School property tax aids and credits are paid on the same payment schedule as school revenues that are appropriated in the first three pages of this spreadsheet. So when the House bill makes the change to 70-30, the tracking sheet reflects all of that savings within each of the appropriations on those first three pages, but then there's a half a dozen tax aids and credits that also generate savings. And in the House, the process was the tax bill accounted for the appropriating the 90%, and then this House education bill was showing the savings from going from 90% to 70% relative to base, and that's the $15 million in savings you see on line 252 for the House.
And the difference in the Senate, the discussion was very similar in the Senate side, but we're talking through the proper ways to account for this with the tax bill on the Senate side. So the Senate does capture that savings as well, but we're waiting direction on the proper location to carry those savings.
And Mr. Chair and members, that will be, if the 70-30 shift is adopted, that will be something that will, that both the House and Senate have the same position in terms of the language, but you will both need some direction from leadership as to who counts what savings from making that change, the Tax Conference Committee or the Education Conference Committee. And then, Mr. Chair, there are three other changes that fall outside of the sort of the education, the K-12 and early childhood appropriations, and those are on line 253 to 255. On line 253 is the $28 million I mentioned about the savings from those districts paying off their maximum effort capital loan balances or principal balances. The assumption would be that would generate about $28 million of checks to the general, or actually to the debt service fund, which reduces the transfer obligation from the general fund to the debt service fund for payment of state bonds. So this line reflects the savings to the general fund from those checks being accepted from those school districts. And you can see that that's a one-time savings for fiscal 2013 only. Then line 254 includes a $2 million ongoing appropriation for the Department of Natural Resources starting in fiscal 13. Under current law, minerals management activities conducted by the DNR on school trust lands are paid for with money that is diverted from the revenue stream from those trust lands to the permanent school fund. What this says is that all of the minerals revenue that's collected for school trust lands is should be deposited in the permanent school trust fund and added to the principal of that fund, and that the management activities performed by the DNR relative to those lands should be paid for with the general fund appropriation. If this appropriation wasn't made but the House language stood, the DNR there would be a $2 million effective reduction in the DNR budget, and they would either have to make up that with other funds or would have to stop performing minerals management activities to the extent that they would save this amount of money. Then on line 255, there's a small increase in 2015 in total statewide levies, and so there's a property tax refund impact that's really a tax committee jurisdiction issue but is carried here because the tax bill had already passed in the House, and this additional $70,000 in fiscal 15 had to be accounted for somewhere. And so you see on line 259, the bottom line, relative to the target for both bills of about $14.2 billion, and the difference Senate to House is about $1.7 million in difference for fiscal 12 and 13 between the Senate bill and the House bill, and the Senate target and the House target. And then probably not helpful to go into a lot of detail. We've talked a bit about the shift. Some people, when they look at how much money is spent in education, want to see what that total is if you exclude the effects of shifting between years using our aid payment and property tax shifts. And line 273 or 270, 264 to 271 include all those detail, all those shifts. And then line 273 shows the education expenditures backing those shifts out for both bills, and then the non-education general fund expenditures, and that's the tax aids and credits budget and the DNR and those four line items, not including the shift, and backs those changes out. And so you get to your bottom line relative to shifts with line 273 and 276. And then on the bottom, 312 and 13, the House is $1,000 under the target. No, $1,000. And the Senate is on the appropriations are exactly then on target. They cut your
fees. Oh, yeah, that's right. So.
And and that's it on appropriations. And, I'm sorry. Where's that page? What? Somehow the agency budget didn't get printed, and we'll have to...
I thought we just zeroed out the agency, right?
Now we eliminated them.
Is there anything else, Mr. Crow or Mr. Nunn?
Well, we should go through the levy tracking sheet, and at some point we should talk about the agency.
Now, Mr. Crow, why don't we, because I know that there is a certain event going on tonight that I know is important to many individuals. I want to be respectful of that. So we'll leave the agenda at that. Unless Senator Olson, did you want to add any other items before we adjourn the meeting tonight? Okay. And so Senator Olson will have the gavel for the next conference committee, and if it ends up, I know in the rules we have this situation where it says every day it's supposed to rotate. My practice is going to be that Senator Olson will call the next meeting regardless of when that is, and then likewise when Senator Olson holds the next meeting, so members are clear on that. So any closing comments at all? Or?
No, I think sounds like we're getting off to a good start.
I am very excited about this, Senator Olson. We're going to have a great time this year. So any closing comments from members of the committee? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.